Losing it. Leave it for tomorrow. I laid my pad neatly in the center of my desk, then claimed my coat. On the way out, I said to Eric, I'm leaving for the day. I'll be in tomorrow, but Marty and I are planning an excursion to Montgomery County, so I'll be out in the middle of the day. Anything else I need to know about?
You said to remind you about the board reports.
Almost done. I want to give them a quick look in the morning, and then you can pretty them up and copy and mail them. See you tomorrow.
Down the hall, down the elevator, through the lobby, waving at Bob, out the door.
I was early, and it was chilly, so I stood in the lee of one of the massive pillars and watched people go by on the street. Everything looked very ordinary. Close to rush hour, there were plenty of pedestrians, as well as a few cars. This street, this neighborhood, had always seemed reasonably safe to me, although I had to remind myself that a high-profile murder had taken place in the parking lot directly across the street, well before my time. The killer was still in jail, but his name popped up in Where Are They Now? Kind of op-ed pieces every now and then. How long ago had that been? Long before I was reading newspapers, I was sure. A black activist, a journalist, convicted of shooting a cop. He still had his supporters in the larger community. How much had changed in the last generation? James's car glided to a stop at the curb, and I hurried down the steps and climbed in, leaving my dark thoughts behind.
Chapter 9.
How was your day, dear?
James said in a mock ironic tone as he merged into traffic. Peachy keen, nobody shot at me.
That's good to hear.
I pondered a moment as James navigated a particularly thorny intersection, then said, Detective Ravenick stopped by this morning.
Really?
James said in a carefully neutral tone.
What did she want?
I think obliquely she was asking for our help. She isn't buying the random shooting theory, but I gather her superiors want to close the case. I can see both sides of that. Although I did want to see those guys who had given me the scare of my life caught and punished somehow.
Why doesn't she think it was random?
Because her gut tells her that that particular spot was not a likely place for that kind of crime. There was no reason for those guys to go looking for someone to shoot there. There were plenty of other places with more potential victims if they were looking to make a statement of some sort, which leads her to think that maybe they were looking for one of us, and I'd like to eliminate myself from that list, because I haven't done anything to tick off any armed killers lately, certainly not in that part of town. James said noncommittally.
So she wants to look at Tyrone and Charisse.
Yes, if she can.
Why did she come to you? You didn't know either one of them, right?
No, I didn't. Although Marty met Charisse a while back, and LaToya once dated Tyrone. Small world, isn't it? Anyway, the police can look into their personal lives better than Marty and I can. But she asked if we could check out what was so important about that particular address, and whether it might have anything to do with it.
So Marty's involved, too?
Yes, and Hrivenek knows it. Marty happened to be in my office when she came calling. She talked to both of us. I glanced in his direction, but his right ear wasn't giving anything away. You have a problem with that?
He sighed quietly. You and Marty in combination have a knack for finding trouble. I'm not saying it's your fault, either one of you, but it does keep happening.
I know. Look, I'm not convinced we're going to find anything that's helpful, and we're going to be looking at the Society's documents inside our nice, safe building. But this has made me realize that I should know more about the neighborhoods outside of Center City and Society Hill. Even if they're disaster areas now, they were once important to the city.
I admire the principle now, but I prefer you didn't go tramping around those neighborhoods.
Believe me, so would I. I'm not planning to organize guided tours for our patrons or anything like that. Maybe a series of online articles for our website or newsletter, or a small pamphlet. Maybe we could get the city involved and they could help distribute it. Or we could call it a public service. And you know we're going to nominate Elliot for the board slot, and he's the perfect person to help with this.
Now, you are remarkably resilient,
James said.
You're actually planning to turn this shooting into a research opportunity for the Society, complete with publications.
Was that a criticism? I turned toward him as far as my seatbelt would allow and said, What, you think I should be wallowing in a puddle of tears? Would you be happier if I fell apart?
No, of course not. I only hope that you feel you can fall apart if you need to. I'll be there to pick up the pieces.
Oh, maybe I was in denial, trying to pretend the whole thing had never happened. And maybe it was unrealistic of me to believe that I would be all better after only one day, or two, or 200. Thank you. The rest of the ride home was quiet. Over dinner, I said, I didn't tell you about Marty's latest proposal.
Not crime-solving, I hope.
No. Apparently there's a colonial estate in Montgomery County that's up for grabs, and she wondered if the society would be interested in taking it on. I proceeded to explain what Marty had told me, but that didn't take long because I didn't have many details. So I said I'd go see it with her tomorrow morning. I don't think it's a good fit for the society, either practically or financially, but it sounds lovely and I'd be happy to see it. And either Marty or I should bring it to the board, if there's even a remote possibility that it could work out. Or a board member might know someone who might be interested.
You should be safe enough in Montgomery County.
I don't know about that, James. Isn't it hunting season? I said, suppressing a smile.
For a deer, I believe. Are you worried about being mistaken for a deer?
While sipping tea in the parlor? Not really. But after yesterday, I'm not going to take anything for granted. We spent a quiet evening with no shots fired. I noticed that James stayed just a bit closer to me than usual, which I thought was sweet. He might be a big, strong FBI agent, but he was worried about me. I was surprised at how good it felt to have somebody who would worry about me. The next morning we drove into the city together, and James dropped me off at the society. You're spoiling me, you know, I told him as I collected my things before getting out of the car.
I want to. If you want me to be rational, I could say that I go this way anyway, so it's merely practical to drop you off. But you may have noticed that I don't feel exactly rational at the moment.
I do appreciate it, you know. You don't see any armed thugs loitering on the street waiting for me? He actually scanned the scene in front of us.
No, but you know it's easy to conceal a weapon. Have fun with Marty, and don't commit to anything.
Hey, don't tell me how to do my job. I gave him a thorough kiss and climbed out of the passenger door, then hurried up the stairs. It was cold, I told myself, ignoring the fact that I felt all too exposed on the street, where almost anyone might be hiding a weapon. Upstairs in my office, there were no surprises waiting, no Detective Rivenack, no phone messages. I made myself a cup of coffee, then settled behind my desk and sorted through what I needed to do. Marty would arrive in an hour or less, and I should find out what I could about what I was going to be looking at, so I wouldn't embarrass myself. Realistically, as I had told Marty, there was no way the society could take on a building, no matter how beautiful and historical it was. We didn't have the staff to manage it, nor the money to hire people to do it for us. It might have been more appropriate if it were in the city, but instead it was way out in the suburbs. I would be more than willing to direct some of the society's staff time and cultural capital, if there was such a thing, to finding the right institution to take it, but the society was not that institution. Still, Marty was merely doing what she had promised the sisters, and I was always happy to see a piece of history that I had missed, and there were plenty of those. At 10 of 10, Marty called from her car and said she was idling at the curb in front of the building. You ready to go? I am. No change in plans? Nope. If they offer lunch, say yes. But it may be cucumber sandwiches and petit four. I won't complain. Be right down. On the way out, I told Eric where I was going, and then I wasn't sure when I'd be back. I checked to see that I had my cell phone and that it was set to vibrate. You can call me if anything urgent comes up.
What would you call urgent right now?
Eric asked. Well, maybe if Detective Rivenack calls. James has my number and Marty will be with me. I guess that's about all. Thanks, Eric. I made my way downstairs and out to Marty's car. Everything good? Marty asked as she pulled away from the curb. Just fine. Do I look like I don't think so?
No, you look normal. Maybe that's the problem. You get shot at, you should look different.
Well, I'm sorry I look too good. I promise you I'm quivering inside.
I'm surprised Jimmy isn't glued to your side as a self-appointed bodyguard.
Since Marty and James had grown up together, she knew him well. I think he'd like to be, but he respects my independence. I'll let him comfort me later.
I bet, Marty said with what looked like a smirk. I ignored her innuendo.
Did you talk to Elliot?
I did. He's definitely on board with being on board, if you know what I mean.
Good. He knows the vote is next week, right?
Yes, but we don't see any problems, do we?
Not that I know of. I'm looking forward to getting to know him better. Did you have a chance to talk about the neighborhoods project?
We talked about it a little, but let's save that for the ride home. I should fill you in on what we're going to see now.
You know, you never told me why the Oliver sisters approached you about this. Anything I should know?
It's complicated.
Marty, with you, it's always complicated. Why'd they pick you as their what? Agent? Ambassador?
I had a school friend who lived out that way, and she introduced me to the sisters because she thought I'd be interested in the house. This was years ago. She told them about my role at the society, and I guess we spent some time talking about what the society does. Before you ask, they've never been members or donors. So when they decided to sell, they got in touch with me. I think they don't trust real estate agents who are busy counting up the dollar signs, and their lawyer in Center City was a friend of my father's. All of the interconnections were typical for Marty. Heaven help me if I ever had to draw a diagram to explain her links to anything.
Please remember, Marty, I haven't made any promises. You know the society as well as or better than I do, and you know what our limitations are.
Of course I do. But maybe together we can come up with some ideas for the place. It really is gorgeous, and mostly untouched.
All right, fill me in.
I settled back in my seat to listen.
Marty launched into a brisk summary of the house we were headed to see.
Traditional high-end colonials set in the midst of over 50 acres of land, built in 1769, and it includes a carriage house and barn, built for the son of a wealthy local family when he got married, and it was a real power marriage, to the daughter of one of the most prominent men in the Commonwealth. They did lots of entertaining. Ben Franklin stayed there now and then, before the Revolution. Typical layout, and most of the woodwork is original. Great staircase. As the story goes, they kept slaves in the attic a long, long time ago. What else do you want to know?
Have the ladies had any conversation with local officials?
I don't think so. Not genteel enough for them. And they didn't want to get the lawyer involved, at least not yet. We might be able to walk them through the process to gift it to the town, but that's the last resort. Look, nothing has to be decided today. We're just chatting. Did I mention they want to give the furniture with it?
Yes, you did, yesterday. I will reserve judgment, but I won't make any promises to them.
You said yesterday they were mentally alert?
Yep, sharp as tacks. You'll see.
After another half hour of driving, we pulled into a long driveway and arrived in front of a handsome colonial house. I made a quick visual inventory. Central doorway with traditional portico on columns, flanked by two windows on either side. A carriage house with three bays, closed off by arched doors, lay behind the house on the right. The ground floor windows had to be 6 feet high, no expense spared when the place was built. Two central brick chimneys indicated the fireplaces that had heated the rooms. From a quick perusal, I couldn't see any obvious signs of neglect or damage. The paint, while not new, was still sound. The roof had all its shingles, and the foundation stones were still well pointed. It was simply a beautiful example of the architecture of its time. But that didn't mean the society could do anything with it. Marty parked, and I followed her to the front door, whose hardware also appeared to be original. She wrapped the large brass knocker firmly, and it took little time before we could hear the tap-tap of shoes, with heels if I guessed correctly. The door was opened by a woman only a couple of inches shorter than I was, wearing a nice shirtwaist dress and, as I had deduced, low-heeled pumps. A string of pearls circled her neck, and her white hair was swept neatly up in a soft chignon. I hoped I would look anywhere near as good when I was approaching 90. She extended a hand, and I took it. Her grip was strong.
"I'm Phoebe Oliver, and you must be Nell Pratt. Thank you for coming all this way to see us. We don't get many visitors these days, I'm afraid. Penelope and I have outlived most of our peers, sadly. Please come in. Good to see you again, Martha."
"I'm always happy to see you, Phoebe."
Marty and Phoebe exchanged a brief hug, and I wondered how well they knew each other.
"Would you like a cup of tea after your journey, Miss Pratt, or would you prefer to see the house first?"
Please call me Nell. Frankly, I'm itching to see the house. It's imposing, and your family appears to have taken good care of it.
We can't take all the credit. I'm not sure how much Martha has told you, but our ancestor had it snatched from him a very long time ago because he chose the wrong side during the revolution. It was our great-grandfather who managed to buy it back, shortly after his return from the Civil War, before too much had changed. But you're right. It had been lovingly maintained in the interval, and there was little to do in the way of repairs. I will be happy to show you.
Marty and I followed her through a series of rooms, large and square, with wide plank floors the color of honey, and simple paneling embellishing walls and fireplaces. I noted that there were radiators under most of the windows, so there had been some changes made over time, but those were not obtrusive. The rooms were furnished, but the furniture was a bit sparse. Still, each piece was the correct period, and was gleaming with the kind of polish that only time and care could provide. It was, without question, lovely. We ended the tour downstairs in the dining room, where a sumptuous tea was laid out on a mahogany table that could have seated a dozen people. Another elderly woman, clearly related to Phoebe, stood behind the spread, beaming.
"I'm so glad you could come. I'm Phoebe's sister, Penelope. I'm sorry I didn't join you on the tour, but I was engaged in the kitchen, and I do have trouble with the stairs these days. Please sit down and serve yourselves."
The teapot was indeed silver, as were the matching sugar bowl and creamer. The plates laden with goodies, yes, including finger sandwiches and small cakes, as Marty had predicted, were, to my semi-experienced eye, English bone china. The teacups were almost thin enough to see through, with handles the size of large spaghetti. I felt as though I had stepped back into another time, and I was glad I had worn my grandmother's pearls. We made chit-chat about people we all knew, about the county and the region, about the history that surrounded us, and it was all very pleasant. Then Phoebe, who was clearly the spokesperson for the duo, carefully set down her cup in its saucer and said, "Now, shall we talk business?"
Chapter 10
Marty and I looked at each other, but I had the feeling the ball was in my court. "Phoebe, Penelope, what is it you're hoping to do with this house?"
"Keep it standing and as close to its current and, may I add, historical state as possible," Phoebe said quickly. Penelope nodded her agreement.
"And what do you think your options are?"
Phoebe regarded me steadily. "Miss Pratt, we are neither stupid nor feeble-minded, even though we are women who grew up in a very different world, and we are unquestionably old. We were raised in this house, and we treated it as a house rather than a museum. We scuffed the floors with our Mary Janes, and yes, we even slid down the staircase railing a time or two. We knew the place was centuries old, but that didn't mean a lot to us then. Neither have we been shuttered in this place all our lives, though we never married. I attended college and graduated, and we traveled to Europe together. Penelope lived in Boston for a time and was once engaged. Yet somehow we always ended up back here. It was not exactly a deliberate choice, but we have not been unhappy. We were blessed with enough money to live out our days with a bit left over. We've been lucky. Now we know we won't last much longer, and we accept that. Patience, Nell. I am going to answer your question. We are well aware that this is a valuable piece of real estate. We could, no doubt, find a private purchaser for it, one who would pay a lot of money for a place of this size with a good deal of privacy. Movie stars, titans of industry, and the like.
I wondered if I saw a twinkle in Phoebe's eye. She seemed to be enjoying this.
But there is no guarantee that such a buyer would keep the house as it is, or even keep it at all. He might tear it down and build what I believe they call a McMansion, or he might give it to some fringe church or sect, or turn it into a private medical clinic for substance abusers who can afford expensive treatment. We selfishly don't want that, and since it is ours to dispose of as we choose, we want to set the terms. Terms that will survive even our deaths. A lot has happened in this house over two centuries. We want to honor that long history. Can you understand that?"
I nodded. "I can and do, After all, you know what I do. I manage a library and museum that seeks to preserve the past so that later generations can enjoy it. I realize this is not always a popular thing to do, and that many ordinary people think we're obsolete. So I am on your side in principle. But the reality is, few institutions want to take on something like this. Say there's a way to create an endowed house museum, a non-profit organization that would open it to the public on some regular schedule, because there has to be a public component to it. I don't know the details of your financial situation, but I'm not sure that anyone has the money to keep it just as it is forever. Any house needs caring and tending, because houses seem to want to fall to pieces. Phoebe smiled. Do you live in an older home, Nell? I do. One that's about 100 years younger than this one. It's beautiful, but it's a constant battle to keep it that way. So you can't create a time warp or freeze it forever.
We know that. What do you see as other alternatives?
This is not my area of expertise, but you could give it to an institution, or to the county or the township, along with enough money to keep it going. They, too, will have to open it to the public in order to justify owning it, and managing it, and paying for its upkeep. Municipalities have to answer to their voters when it comes to budgets, and making it a public building will create wear and tear on it, particularly the interior.
And your society will not take on that responsibility?
Hadn't Marty told her, or was Phoebe just verifying that information? We can't, I'm sorry to say. We're already stretched thin financially, as are many of our cultural colleagues. Take the Barnes Foundation, for example, because it's a similar case. Albert Barnes created a wonderful art collection in the 1920s, and he wanted it preserved exactly as he had arranged it, in his home. He left the house and plenty of money to the foundation. His will allowed very limited access to the collection. Well, a few years ago that will was broken in a rather acrimonious and public lawsuit, and the collection was moved to Philadelphia, near other museums, so that vastly more people could enjoy the collection, and the fact that people want to see the art means that they will pay to see it. So the new arrangement generates income to sustain the building and its contents. I'm sure the man is turning over in his grave, but many more people have the opportunity to enjoy the art.
But that would not apply in this case, Phoebe said. What are you suggesting?
You're right. We can't just pick up your house and drop it in the middle of Fairmount Park, and its location is part of its historic identity. I cited that example because it shows that Barnes's vision for the future became obsolete, and a way was found to perpetuate it in a somewhat different form. As for your house, I looked briefly at Marty again, but she showed no inclination to jump in. I have no idea what to suggest to you, because I only heard about this yesterday, and it's been kind of a difficult week so far.
So I understand, Phoebe said, not unkindly. But if I interpret events correctly, you were willing to venture out of, shall we say, your comfort zone, because there are those who believe that even the lowliest row house is part of the city's past and is worth remembering.
Touché. I smiled at the sisters. You're right. Look, I'm on your side, really. I would love to help you find a way to work this out, to everyone's benefit. It's a big plus that money doesn't have to be the driving force in this decision. But right now, I don't know where to start.
That is perfectly understandable, my dear, Phoebe said. We will be happy to give you some time to reflect and to investigate the options. Just don't take too long.
I had the feeling we were being politely dismissed, but that didn't trouble me. Phoebe had given me a lot to think about. Marty stood up first. Phoebe, Penelope, thank you so much for giving us the tour and for explaining so clearly what you want to do. I thought Nell needed to meet you and hear your thoughts, and I still believe she and the society can help, and I can help her. Let us kick this around with each other and with some of our colleagues and see what we can come up with. We can't promise you anything, but we'll try.
We can't ask for more than that, Martha dear, can we, Penelope?
No, no, not more. We want to hear what you think. I'm sure you'll work hard for us.
Penelope beamed at both of us, nodding all the while.
Well, then, Phoebe said, we should let you begin your drive back to the city.
Thank you for taking the time to hear us out. Nell, it has been a pleasure to meet you.
The pleasure is mine. I'll be in touch, I promise.
At the door we shook hands, or rather, Phoebe shook my hand, and Penelope pressed it gently, softly. She never stopped smiling. They closed the door behind us as we made our way to Marty's car. We sat down in it, but before Marty started the engine, she asked,
"Well?"
"Well, what?" I retorted. "They're delightful, like they've stepped out of another time. The house is beautiful, and I haven't the slightest idea what to do."
"Exactly," Marty said. "At least there are two of us in the same boat now."
She started the car and pointed it down the long driveway. "But I have faith that we can figure something out."
I was glad she did, because I didn't. "You know, you were awfully quiet in there. Very unlike you," I told her as she headed back toward the city.
"I've heard the story and I know the house. I wanted you to have their full attention."
"Those ladies are really something, aren't they? Phoebe in particular."
"They are. As you no doubt observed, Phoebe is the dominant sister. She's a couple of years older than Penelope. Penelope has been a follower all her life, but she's very sweet."
"You aren't by any chance related to them?"
I had to ask. Marty seemed to be related to half the people in Pennsylvania and a few more in New Jersey.
"Not that I know of, but I think my grandfather had a fling with their mother sometime around 1920.
"And you know this how?"
"Family stories. Some you tell at parties, some behind closed doors. Doesn't matter anyway now. So I and the rest of my family don't want to step in, and you're telling me you, meaning the society, can't."
"Yes, and you know why. We're holding our own now, but I can't even think about expanding."
"I get it. Just making sure we're on the same page. So now we beat the bushes to come up with another idea. Let's find some time to go over our donor and membership lists and figure out who we can approach."
"We?"
"Yes, we," Marty said sharply. "I know people, but you, as president of the society, have some public clout. We may need both of us to get this done." I mulled that over for a couple of miles. Then I said,
"You know, what Phoebe said, kind of comparing what I was doing in Philadelphia and what they want to do with their estate, got me thinking. I didn't see it before, because a city slum and a suburban manor house seem on the surface to have little in common, but they are both part of local history. The society works to preserve Pennsylvania history. So in a sense, we have an obligation to both, unequal though they are. But the problem as I see it is, with limited resources, how do we pick and choose? We have to set priorities. And we have to think about which projects will be best for the society in the long run. I'm sure there are people on the board who would say we should go for the estate, because that's the way a lot of older members see our mandate. Trying to stick our noses into city neighborhood development, past and present, quickly becomes political and is definitely controversial. But is it any less our responsibility?"
Marty kept her eyes on the road. "Good questions, Nell, and I don't have any quick answers. I've been involved with the society one way or another most of my life. Even I have seen a lot of changes, and I'm not going to argue that we should preserve it just the way it is. We have the collections, and they're great. But history doesn't stop at any particular time, it just keeps going. The city is like a living thing, and it keeps changing, shifting. We can choose to hunker down and tend to our collections, or we can make an effort to shape the course of public understanding of what history actually is."
"Well, Marty, I've never heard you say anything like that. Certainly not at board meetings."
"Hey, just because I devote most of my time to the Terwilliger collection doesn't mean I'm blind or clueless. I'm involved in other stuff in the city and beyond, and it's not all pretty. I think we have an opportunity here to at least open up a discussion, and maybe to do some good. We don't have to make a decision today, but I think we have to stake out a public position pretty soon, especially after what happened to you. You have the public's attention for about 2 seconds. What are you going to do with it?"
This was turning out to be quite a week. Only 2 days earlier, life had been peaceful and normal. Since then, I'd been shot at in a slum, been all but handed the keys of a colonial mansion, and was now faced with redefining the historic mission of the society. I wanted to take a nap. "Can I sleep on it, please? I need to think about all of this. I agree that it's time to open this discussion, but can it wait until tomorrow?"
"I guess." Marty sighed dramatically. I checked to make sure she was smiling. She dropped me back at the society building, saying she was headed home. I trudged up the steps, waved at Bob, and made a beeline for my office. "Any messages, Eric?" I asked when I arrived at his desk. "Plenty," he said, handing me a stack a half-inch thick. "Mostly press, though. I said you were out of the office, which was true, and that you would get back to them, which I didn't assume was true."
"Thank you, Eric. In fact, I may want to talk to some of them, but I need to figure out which ones.
I'll deal with that in the morning." Maybe the news cycle would have moved on by then, and my decision would be made for me. The phone on Eric's desk rang again, and a moment later he stuck his head in.
"It's that detective. You want to take it?"
"Yes, I guess. I'll pick up." I waited until Eric had shut the door to my office, then picked up the phone.
"Detective Hrivenek, what can I do for you today?"
"Tyrone Blakeney wants to talk with you."
"Really? Why?"
"He didn't say. He said it was okay if I was there, too."
"When?"
"He's still in the hospital and he's in rocky shape but stable. I would have gone over today, but the doctors say he's got to rest some more. A couple of bullets came pretty close to some important parts of him. How about tomorrow morning? Want to meet me there? Say 9?
Yeah, I guess that would work. In the lobby? Oh, which hospital?"
"Jefferson. See you then."
I sat back, confused. Why would Tyrone want to talk with me, with or without the police? But I couldn't think of any reason to turn down the request, and I was trying to keep the detective happy. So it looked like I should be there. At least it was near the society. I picked up the phone and hit James's number. When he answered, I said quickly, "Tyrone Blakeney wants to talk to me at the hospital tomorrow morning at 9. I can drive myself if that's a problem for you."
"No problem. Did he say why?"
"No, the request came from Detective Hrivenek, so I have no idea."
"Will you be ready to leave at 5 today?"
he asked. I checked the time. Already past 3, thanks to my excursion to Montgomery County. "Sure. See you then." We hung up. I strolled out to Eric's desk. "I'll be out of the office for a couple of hours in the morning tomorrow. Are we all set with the board reports?"
"Yes, ma'am. Signed, sealed, and delivered, as the saying goes. Want me to send a reminder to the board members?"
"Give them a couple of days after they've received the packet of materials and then nudge them, so they'll remember to read the reports. And I may have something to add to the agenda. I'll let you know."
After I'd mulled over the Save the Manor project, or did I mean Save the Neighborhoods? Chapter 11. James arrived right on time. As I scrambled into the passenger seat of his car, I said, "You don't have to do this every day, you know. I can take the train."
"I know,"
he said. When he didn't add anything, I told him, "I've been doing this for years and I've never had any problems. Well, there are always drunks or homeless people in the subway tunnels, but I know how to avoid them and they don't usually bother anybody."
"I'm sure,"
he said, and stopped again. "So?" I demanded.
"I'm only trying to be supportive. Look at it as therapy for me, not you. I need to feel that I'm doing something to help."
"Oh, well, if you put it like that. But if you have work-related things you need to deal with late in the day, I can manage."
"Of course you can. Did it occur to you that I like to have someone to talk to during the drive?" "It's that or tune up some oldies and sing along, which means I get some really odd looks on the highway."
I tried to picture that.
"I bet.
If you stick headphones on, they'll think you're having an important conversation with someone, at least until they get close enough to hear the bass line."
"I'll take that under advisement. So, how was your day?"
"Marty dragged me off to the country, remember? We visited the delightful Oliver sisters, who are living in an impressive colonial home in the wilds of Montgomery County."
"All right, you told me about that. Does Martha have a plan?"
I was still surprised that she didn't. Was she bringing this up now only to distract me? Not that she shared with me. In fact, she was curiously silent. In a perfect world, she'd probably find a way for the society to adopt the building, but she knows we don't have the money to do that. Nor does she, personally. You think she could put together a collection of assorted Terwilligers and make them all ante up a share?"
"Frankly, I don't think that's likely,"
James said.
"The family fortunes are not what they once were. Plus her line, her father and grandfather, is the only one that took a serious interest in local history, so it would be a hard sell to the rest of them. What's the place like?"
"Preserved in amber. It's lovely.
and very little has changed in the past 200-plus years, down to the pieces of furniture and maybe even some of the draperies. It would make a great house museum, but I don't know who would want to step up. The ladies are charming, and they served us a perfect tea, which is why I'm starving. Tea sandwiches and dainty cookies do not a meal make.
I'm sure we can remedy that once we get home.
We managed to put a meal together, and it was only after we'd sat down to enjoy it that I said, I told you on the phone that Tyrone Blakeney has asked to see me, but I'm still puzzled about why.
The detective didn't explain why?
No, but, you know, she doesn't share more than she feels necessary.
How's he doing? Is he critical or something?
No, she said he's stable, but he's still in the hospital. I suppose he could be considered lucky that he survived at all.
Are you going to ask him if he has any ideas about who was shooting at you?
That's hardly my role, especially with a detective sitting right there. And I doubt he'd want to bare his heart to me even if she wasn't. It's more likely that he's looking to get some PR out of this event and needs my cooperation.
You sound cynical. But it suggests that he believes his project is going forward, in spite of events.
With or without him? Or Charisse? I suppose it does. Would that be a bad thing?
You don't suppose he orchestrated all this as a publicity stunt?
James asked. James, someone was killed, I erupted. And Tyrone was badly wounded. It wasn't just for show. I'd seen the blood, so I knew. James held up both hands.
Just asking. You might have asked the wrong person to stage it. Somebody who's a lousy shot.
I refuse to believe that. I'm going to wait and see what he has to say, and I'll make sure Detective Hrivenek sticks around to hear it.
Good. What do you think about his project, shooting aside?
This all came up so fast that I haven't had time to do any research into it, or into any of the competing ideas. You know, it's not a simple task to salvage a dying neighborhood, but then nothing ever is in this city. In a way, the manor that Marty and I visited is kind of the flip side of the issue. It's undeniably historic, and it's beautiful. Say someone, it could be anyone, from the township to a museum to a private donor, had limited resources and could choose only one. How would he or she decide which? Who gets to declare one is more important and more worthy than the other? James chewed a mouthful of food, no doubt allowing himself some time to think.
That's not an easy question to answer, as I'm sure you realize. In fact, you and the society are probably the best equipped to make that assessment, or at least make the case for one or the other.
When I started to protest, he stopped me.
I know, there's no way the society could take on either project. But who could? At least you're in the position to answer that, by identifying potential supporters. Or would you rather wash your hands of the whole thing? You could walk away from the North Philly project, you know, and nobody would think less of you, under the circumstances.
Maybe. I'd look like an elitist coward if I went for the other one now. Thank goodness I don't have to decide anything right away. The next morning, James dropped me off in front of Jefferson University Hospital, but he refused to leave until he'd seen Detective Hrivenek arrive.
Let me know when you get back to the society, will you?
He really was worried about me, probably more so than I was. It was sweet, but troubling. I will, I told him as I climbed out of the car. When I approached the watching detective, she said,
"You babysitting, you know?"
He's worried. Does he have reason to be? Or should I tell him to back off? She shrugged silently, which didn't help at all. I tried another tack. Why does Tyrone want to talk to me? You've already interviewed him, right?
Of course, as soon as he could speak.
Did he give you anything useful?
Not really. He claims he was so busy trying to convince you about his brilliant plan that he wasn't paying attention to what was happening on the street, even though Chapman was, which was not too smart of him. He should know better. He grew up in that neighborhood.
I wasn't surprised. Maybe that's why he's so committed to the project, and maybe he thought he was safe there. Charisse was more anxious. I told you she's the one who noticed the car. She's not from the neighborhood?
No, from out past Chester, but she went to Temple, so she knows the general area. She's a bit younger than Tyrone's, so maybe her experience was different. Ready?
Yes, let's go. I really need to get back to work. The last time I'd been in this hospital, it was when James had been injured, so it didn't hold happy memories for me. Is there anything you want me to say, or not to say? Hrivenek was moving fast ahead of me.
Nope. I'm not expecting anything in particular, but he asked, so I'm delivering you.
Is this an official interview?
Not necessarily. You want privacy?
No, not really. I'd rather you stayed. Remember, I don't know this man, and I have no idea what he wants or what he's going to say. I doubt it would be anything too personal.
No problem, the detective replied. Here we are.
We walked into a double room with one empty bed. Tyrone occupied the one closer to the window. He looked remarkably good for someone with nasty holes in him. He was dozing when we approached, but opened his eyes when he heard us.
Ms. Pratt, thanks for coming. I wasn't sure you would.
He nodded toward Hrivenek.
Detective?
Was the formality for the detective's benefit? Call me Nell, please. After what you and I have been through together, we should be on a first-name basis, don't you think? I was sorry to hear about Charisse, but I'm glad you're okay.
I'll live. Yes, it's a shame about Charisse. She was really a big help in managing the interface between my group and the city. It was through her efforts that we turned up your society's connection. You would not believe the state of record-keeping at City Hall.
I can guess. I know how hard it is to keep track of our own materials, and we're a lot smaller than Philadelphia. Look, Tyrone, I don't want to take up too much of your time, and you need your rest, so let's get to the point. Why did you ask to see me? He glanced at Hrivenek.
This off the record, Detective?
Hrivenek was leaning silently against the wall.
Sure, if you want, unless you plan to point a finger at someone in particular.
Just so we're clear. Miss Pratt, no. First, I want to apologize for dragging you into something that nearly got you killed. I swear I had no idea that there was anything dangerous about the place. You've seen it. There's nothing there. That building, the one you own, isn't worth anything to anyone, including my group. For us, it's just a symbol, and a good visual for the press. But in itself, it's worthless.
So why was anyone shooting at us?
I don't know. Swear to God. I've been thinking on this for 2 days now. I grew up in that neighborhood, and still know some folk there. I can't think of a single one who'd want to do me harm, much less go after anyone with me.
What about new gangs? Hrivenek demanded. You up on all of them?
Well, not exactly. I haven't lived there for a while, and I know things change, sometimes pretty fast. But you still have to ask, why go after us? We weren't doing any harm to anybody. We aren't looking to take anything away from anybody, because there's nothing left to take.
I glanced at the detective, but she didn't seem to have anything to add. You're saying you don't think the shooting is related to anyone from the neighborhood, right? I asked. Tyrone nodded. So what about outside the neighborhood? You tell me you're trying to save the spirit of the neighborhood, its history. But are you the only group who wants to do that? Are there any developers who want a piece of it, who want the land, never mind the house, or anyone who's trying to drive off the competition? Tyrone looked at me like I'd sprouted a second head. I had to wonder what the heck he had been expecting from a museum director.
I'd have to think about that. Maybe ask around the community. It's a possibility.
You do that, Mr. Blakeney.
Detective Hrivenek chimed in. If Nell here hadn't asked those questions, I would have.
Look, my captain would like nothing better than to shut this case down. You want to keep it open and find out who tried to kill you and did kill Charisse? You'd better give me something to work with. You do want to solve this thing, don't you, Mr. Blakeney?
Of course, Detective. I want to help. Let me talk to my people, see if they've heard any rumors. Are you talking to anybody at the city?
Yeah. Hrivenek didn't elaborate. I couldn't think of any more questions to ask, and Tyrone looked like he was flagging. Listen, Tyrone, if you and your group decide to go forward with this project, I'll be happy to put together a history of the neighborhood or any particular property. We can talk about it when you're back on your feet.
That's more than generous, Nell, and I appreciate it. I'll let you know. Do you have any more questions, Detective?
Not right now,
Detective Hrivenek said, giving nothing away.
Feel better. Let's go now.
We walked back out into the corridor, then turned toward the elevators. Do you believe he's on the up and up, Detective? I asked when we were out of earshot.
Maybe, she said, pushing the elevator button. He's got no record, but not many people escape that neighborhood without a few secrets. We've given him something to chew on.
Are you looking at Charisse's department at the city? I said as we entered the elevator.
Wow, you don't give up easily, do you?
No, I don't. Someone shot at me. I didn't like it.
I'd like to find out why. And even if I don't, I'd like it to matter. That's all. We've worked together in the past, and I respect your abilities. I want to help if I can.
I'll keep that in mind, Nell. Yeah, we're checking out the city, but this little property of yours is like a flea speck to them. I can't imagine anyone there would care unless they want back taxes or something. You want to lift back to your place, or is your boyfriend waiting?
I can walk, Detective Meredith. It might take a while before I could walk along city streets, even the familiar ones, without looking over my shoulder, but I had to start sometime.
Chapter 12. On my way to my office, I stopped by Shelby's office and flopped into a chair across from her desk.
"Hey, lady," she greeted me. "You just getting in? You taking, what do they call it, banker's hours?"
"Nope. I was calling upon my fellow victim Tyrone at the hospital. He asked to see me, mostly to apologize, I think. My friend Meredith, the detective, escorted me."
"Oh, so now your buddy is with the lady cop?"
"Sort of. Her superiors want to close the case, call it a random shooting. But that doesn't feel right to her."
"Interesting. You agree with her?"
"Maybe. I don't disagree. There's something odd about the whole thing. Why us? Why then? Why there?"
"Speaking of the there," Shelby said, "I pulled what pitifully few files I could find about the property transfer. 1917 it was, at least at the time it was still part of a row. The donor who left it to the society in his will had bought it as an investment property, and it was kind of puny compared to his estate, the rest of which he left to his family apart from a few other bequests. Maybe he knew it would be a pain in the butt for his heirs to get rid of, so he passed it off to us."
"Was he an axe murderer? A bootlegger?" I asked hopefully. "Maybe there would be a way to spin this event somehow."
"What, you think there's a body or a cache of something valuable?" "Nope, he was a rather dull and ordinary citizen with some money, period. In case you're wondering, there are no descendants left to quibble about it. Sad to say, it's all ours. Have you called our lawyer yet?"
"No, I've been a bit busy. Maybe I'm afraid to ask the lawyer because I won't like what she tells me. Anyway, Marty dragged me out to the burbs yesterday to look at a colonial manor house that's going for free to the right person or organization, which basically boils down to one that will leave it exactly as is forever."
"Interesting. Is it a dump?"
"On the contrary, it's lovely and in reasonably good shape. Let me ask you a hypothetical question. As a development person, how would you go about finding someone who wants it?
Could they live in it? Like a resident caretaker?"
"Maybe. I didn't think to ask that. They might have to live in the slave quarters in the attic, though."
"I think there are some places in Fairmount Park that operate like that. Or how about this? If a college or university took it over, they could offer it to visiting faculty or honored guests, as long as they're careful with it. But the college would have to be somewhere near the house for that to make sense."
"That's a thought," I said, impressed. "Could you keep thinking about it and jot down any other ideas you have? I'm still trying to decide if it's worth taking to the board, or if it would just be a distraction."
"That I can do. I can be creative, right?"
"Sure.
As long as nothing in the building changes physically." "On a completely unrelated subject, how's Mr. Agent Man handling things?"
I sighed. "You mean people on the street trying to kill me? He's being unusually attentive. I think he feels guilty that he can't protect me, even though he knows it's impossible unless he locks me in the basement. But it's kind of shaken him up, as it has me, of course."
"I think it sounds sweet. Shows you how he really feels about you. Does he have any opinions about the shooting?"
"Not that he's told me. He did say the only way he could take part in the investigation was if this turned out to be a hate crime. I can't see that happening. And yes, I appreciate that he worries about me. I'm not quite sure how to deal with that. We're both pretty independent."
"Now, you don't have to be so independent anymore, get it? Let him beat his chest and take care of his woman. Anyway, are there no angry white supremacists in Philadelphia for him to hunt down?"
"Plenty of angry people of all colors, but I think the supremacists are outnumbered."
"It only takes one with a gun."
"All too true." I stood up. "I'd better get to work. I haven't even seen Eric yet this morning. If it's still morning."
"It is, barely."
"Shoo," Shelby said, smiling. Down the hall, I greeted Eric. "Shelby says it's still morning, so good morning. Have I missed anything?"
"No, ma'am. Even the press calls have died down. Must be some other crisis going on."
"At least I'm not in the middle of it. Could you get the society's lawyer on the phone, please?"
Sure will.
I'd barely had time to take off my coat and sit down when Eric called out,
Ms. Gould is on the line.
Thanks, Eric, I replied, then picked up. Hi, Courtney. Courtney Gould was a bright young thing at a venerable old law firm in Center City, one that we'd been using for generations. But she knew her stuff, and I was pretty sure she'd act more quickly than her predecessor would have. He'd finally retired at 87. Nell, are you all right? Courtney said quickly. I saw the newscast. You must have been terrified. What on earth were you doing in that neighborhood? Looking at a piece of property that we thought we'd gotten rid of a long time ago. Apparently somebody messed up the paperwork in 1917 or shortly after that. Can you look into it and see what our liabilities and our options are? Like, do we still own it or can we wash our hands of it? Sure, no problem. Just give me the details and I'll get to work on it. Sooner rather than later, I assume. Well, now that it's public knowledge, I think we need to resolve it quickly. I take it the city is involved? Courtney asked. How did you guess? And now, of course, they're short-handed since they've lost Charisse Chapman. Do what you can and get back to me, will you? I'll email you the particulars. And before you ask, we have nothing in our records that will help. We've checked. I hope you have more there. As far as we can tell, the society acknowledged the bequest with a nice thank-you note to the family, but there's nothing about its sale in our records. Of course. And I'm glad you're all right. You want the firm to send you flowers? I'd rather have chocolates, but that's not really necessary. Thanks for the thought. I'll get back to you ASAP. Courtney said and hung up. I amused myself for a moment trying to imagine what the law firm could have put on the card with the flowers. So glad you're not dead. So now back to work, if I could remember what I'd been working on only 3 days earlier. Board packet, done and out the door. Eric? I called out again. He poked his head in the door. Need something? Coffee? Actually, coffee sounds good. I haven't had my morning ration. But I wanted to check if there's been any feedback from board members about the info packet you sent.
Not a peep. I'll get that coffee.
Eric disappeared down the hall. I wasn't surprised. Normally, our board didn't look at the information we sent them, which could be substantial, until the afternoon before the meeting. And then they skimmed it. It didn't worry me. Nothing we had sent out this time around was controversial, including Elliot's nomination for the board, and I'd heard no objections about that. But that reminded me. If I wanted to move forward on this neighborhood history project, still an if, I should talk to Elliot and pick his scholarly brain. I should have some sort of proposal in hand in time for the board meeting, even if I didn't end up moving forward with it. When Eric returned, bearing a cup of hot coffee, I said, "Thank you. Can you get me Elliot Miller on the line?"
The professor? Sure.
Oh, and is there anything else on my schedule for today?
Nope. I think people are giving you plenty of space after what happened. You are okay, aren't you?
Better than expected.
Thank you for worrying, Eric.
Eric had Elliot for me in 30 seconds, so I picked up. Elliot, I'm glad I caught you. I have no idea what your course schedule is.
No. How are you? I have nothing scheduled before mid-afternoon. Marty has been keeping me updated on events, but I didn't want to intrude. Is this call about society business?
Yes and no. It's not about your board nomination, but it is about what happened this week. Marty must have told you that we still seem to own that wretched piece of property in northern Philadelphia.
She did. You haven't learned otherwise.
No, and I guess I don't expect to. I've asked our attorney to check into where things went wrong and what we should do about it. But I have to say, meeting Tyrone Blackney and Charisse Chapman and seeing the area was a real eye-opener for me.
I take it you've stayed out of that part of town before now?
Elliot asked. Yes, although based only on rumor and what I've read. Unfortunately, that part of town lives up, or should I say down, to its reputation. But now I wonder if we've been shirking our responsibility to the city's history by cherry-picking the best parts and ignoring the rest.
Understandably. If so, that's what your visitors want. What is it you'd like from me?
I have this very vague idea that the society could do something about the city's fallen neighborhoods, based on the documents and items in our collections. Okay, call it white guilt if you want, but I feel we should make an effort, and I could use your expertise to fill in the gaps in my own education. Can we get together?
Sure. Lunch?
What, today? I sputtered. Well, sure, I guess.
Anybody else you want to include?
Like Marty, you mean? I'd rather we do this one-on-one. If the idea doesn't pan out, then I haven't wasted anybody else's time. If we decide it's viable, then of course she'll be included. Is that okay? She's not the jealous harpy type, is she? She knows I'm taken. Elliot laughed heartily.
I wouldn't call her that. Where would you like to meet?
Someplace with booths so we can talk. You have any ideas? He mentioned a place that lay halfway between the society and his office at Penn, and we agreed on 1 o'clock. I sipped my coffee and tried to figure out what questions I should ask the expert. We arrived at the restaurant at the same time, and Elliot guided me to a comfortable booth at the back. I'd met him several times before, usually with Marty, and he had impressed me with his quick intelligence and his sense of humor, which in the case of academics didn't always go hand in hand with expertise. I could see why Marty was smitten with him. Still, with a couple of failed marriages behind her, she was proceeding cautiously.
You're looking well,
Elliot began once we were seated.
Especially considering the circumstances.
Thank you, I think. My ducking reflexes are working very well. Once we had perused the menus and ordered, Elliot began,
You said on the phone that you wanted to talk about a neighborhood's project. After an encounter like yours, most people would run the other direction and never look back.
I feel some of that, but visiting that part of North Philadelphia was a revelation to me. It's so easy to stay in my nice, safe part of the city and forget that the other parts even exist. But if I'm going to be a responsible historian and the custodian of the society, I can't, or shouldn't, do that. You know the society, and you know the city and its history, so you're the best person I can ask. What can we do?
I'm glad you came to me now. Where do you want me to start?
Would you mind explaining just what your area of expertise is and how it fits in the academic universe? I've read your resume, of course, and it's in the board packet. But you'll have to translate some parts of it for me. It's been a long time since I studied anything academic.
Of course. Penn offers an interdisciplinary program within the College of Arts and Sciences, at both the undergraduate and graduate level. That means we can draw on faculty members across the university and also reach out to others in the city. The subjects in which we offer classes range from urban industry to race relations to poverty and public policy, and also include such things as architecture and class, music and art. We encourage independent study projects involving a wide spectrum of subjects.
Wow. In a way, I'm jealous. I wish I'd known about such things when I was in college. I was an English major, which doesn't help a whole lot in my current position.
I'm sure the grammar in the documents you send out is impeccable.
Elliot said, struggling to keep a straight face. Thanks a lot. So, given what Penn offers, what do you think the society can do that would fill a niche?
Are you planning an exhibit?
He asked. No, we don't do that anymore. I was thinking of a booklet or a series of small studies of the different neighborhoods, showing how they've evolved and changed over time, that could be combined as a single booklet at some future date, that we can support with our own collections. Elliot nodded.
That sounds appropriate and manageable with your resources and staffing. My department might be able to arrange an internship if you need the help.
And of course we already have Lisa, although we've been keeping her busy anyway. She's been a great asset.
I'm glad to hear that. Lisa's a very hard worker, and she knows her material well. But do allow her time to finish her degree work.
Of course, I don't want to hold her back. So, to return to this concept, is it appropriate to start with North Philadelphia? I'm asking not only because of my own experience there, but because it's so close to all the nicer parts of the city, the ones that tourists visit, but it feels like it could be on another planet.
I think starting there makes sense, and it would be historically appropriate. What's your time frame?
I have no idea, since I just came up with this. I haven't really talked to the rest of the staff, and I don't know the details of what we have in the collections. If this was going to go forward, I needed to involve LaToya ASAP, I reminded myself. But there's another piece, and I don't know if or where it fits. What's happening right now? Who is looking at this problem, and what solutions or plans have they put forward? And are they all on the same page, or are they fighting with each other?
And willing to shoot someone to further their plans? A very interesting question now, and one for which I have no quick answer. I study the history and the policy. The people who are trying to reclaim the neighborhoods for ordinary people rather than gangs are on a different page.
You mentioned something about policy. Can you find me a quick survey of what's going on and who is involved in it in the city government and independently?
Elliot laughed. You don't ask much, do you?